Over and over again, I tried to let the entire book reflect this, that the holiness of all the saints is only the holiness of Jesus reflected in their lives.
Pastor Will Wheaton, author of the new book, Celebrating the Saints.
And this holiness of Christ is the thing which the saints grabbed onto in faith, and it illumined their lives.
You can purchase Celebrating the Saints by calling 1-800-325-3040 or at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues, etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's now just part and parcel of marketing everything. Everything's got to be authentic, genuine, pure, organic. These terms that we don't even really know what they mean, when the marketers put them on the labels of our food, they could mean just about anything. We know that they're simply marketing tools, but they touch upon something that we long for, apparently, and that is to get in touch with something that's real, the real item, the authentic, the unsullied and pure, genuine article. Why do we want that so much? And in an age when we're all about authenticity and having the genuine article, getting back to what is natural, why are we at the same time, apparently, at least as a society, obsessed with denying what is natural or declaring things to be natural that are clearly not natural? We're going to be talking about man's longing for reality. Rebecca Curtis joins us. Also get her thoughts here in the last half hour of Issues, Etc. on feminism and the passing of Phyllis Schlafly. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. We're coming to you live on this Tuesday afternoon, September the 6th. Rebecca Curtis is a pastor's wife and mother of seven children. She has a master's degree from Concordia Seminary. She's co-author of the book Ladylike, Living Biblically, and a recent column for Modern Reformation magazine titled Nature Versus Nature. Rebecca, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Hello, thank you.
I'd like first your thoughts on Phyllis Schlafly. I was reading the Huffington Post earlier today, they're trying to call for decorum because the left has kind of basically come out declaring Phyllis Schlafly to be deserving of eternal hellfire in some cases, literally. But the Huffington Post said, you know, let's try to be a little more sensitive. They described her as promoting outdated values for women. What do you make of that?
The vitriol has been pretty stunning. Do not attack feminism. You will hear back. But it's funny that they should describe the values that Phyllis Schlafly promoted as outdated, because all of those things are things that people still want. We all still want someone who cares for us, who thinks of us and our needs first, who serves us in ways that we need and also in ways that we don't need. All those things that caregivers provide traditionally, of course, that's a mother first and foremost, and many other female relatives as well provide that very personal, intimate care. And that to call those things outdated is really ungrateful, because those are all things that we still wish someone would give us. And when we have someone giving us those things, it's just the height of ingratitude to not recognize that.
Is part of the anger and the vitriol at her passing because she was kind of the first to stand up and publicly say to feminism, just when it was getting its first wind, no, American women don't really want or need that?
I think, yes, I think that's true. I think particularly because she took on very concrete manifestations of feminism, especially the Equal Rights Amendment. That was something that it seemed like anybody ought to be able to get behind, right? Equal rights. This is America. Of course we want equal rights for everyone. And we'd seen other things go into the Constitution on that basis of equality, particularly the amendments about suffrage. And this just kind of seemed like a good way to get that done. Now, Phyllis Schlafly pointed out that the amendment didn't do anything for women that they couldn't already get, or, you know, explicitly, or that they had a way of getting if they wanted it, if that was something they personally valued. It's a short amendment. It doesn't give any specifics. It's really just kind of this feel-good idea. And so her opposition to it was first on that basis, that it doesn't do anything good for women, and also that it removed a lot of protections that women had under the status quo. The main argument that you'll hear about is the draft. She said, look, if we have this, women are going to be subject to the draft exactly the same way men are. And we're so far removed from the draft that I think we forget that mothers are the main people who oppose it, followed very closely by fathers. It's just terrible that the government decides it's going to fight a war, and then it decides that your child is going to fight in it and possibly die in it. Of course, Phyllis Schlafly lived through Vietnam and saw all those things firsthand, saw how terrible it was. And she said, what, we want this for our daughters now too? And some feminists were honest enough to say yes, that's fair. That's what we're after here. That is the fair way of doing it. And also promoting this idea of career advancement and honor and whatever else, you know, all the benefits that accrue from military service, and really even being willing to say, not only are women going to have to be drafted, but they're going to have to be drafted for active combat. And, of course, we've seen that in this past year, that even without the Equal Rights Amendment, this idea of bald equality is so popular that people are willing to say, yeah, we're going to do that. We're going to send girls into war. We're going to send boys into war, disregarding the fact that that makes war more dangerous for everyone because women are not as reliable combatants as men are. But Phyllis Schlafly was the first person who saw those things so clearly, recognized them for what they were, and was willing to stand up and say, no, that's a bad idea. You can't just say equality and automatically have everyone clap.
She also was pretty fearless and didn't seem to care too much whether people thought she was the devil. Can we learn something from that kind of fearlessness that she displayed so often?
I think so. She took unimaginable criticism. People are saying, even at this moment, unbelievably terrible things about her. And like water off a duck's back, I guess, she was always able to just say, I say what I say and you say what you say, and we have a free country and free speech. And she was also, you know, she was not just an anti-feminist. She was a consummate conservative. And from the very beginning of her career or unofficial career, she always was in favor of freedom, and free speech is part and parcel of that.
So what can proponents of biblical womanhood here in the 21st century learn from Phyllis Schlafly?
Everything she said was very tied up in her Christianity, and she really did speak on that basis and said the values that we have are Christian values, and this is why Christians need to be involved in the political process. And she was from the very beginning. She made her, you know, she kind of became famous by writing a pro-Goldwater book, self-publishing it, of course, because she's a conservative. She doesn't have to play by the institution rules. She does things her own way on the basis of freedom. And I think that does set a good example. And she also really combats the caricature that is so often put upon the proponents of traditional sex roles and what Scripture tells us about men and women, that they're different, that has practical implications for the service to which all Christians are called. And she was willing to speak very openly on that, be willing to accept criticism for it, and sets that example of not backing down, not hiding in a corner when people are saying things that are simply untrue.
Before we go to our first break here, you have written recently for Modern Reformation magazine about our longing for, I'll put it in simple terms, kind of our longing for the natural. And it hits home with just about everybody. There seems to be a constant quest for purity in our food. We want everything to be as basic and as natural as possible, that natural is always considered better from scratch is better than from the can, as you point out. What is behind this impulse? What are we looking or longing for?
In that article, I talk about how we all want to be real. We want something that isn't fake. Nobody wants to be poser or for someone to say that you're fake or artificial. And all of that is born of our knowledge that we ourselves are made. We are created. And we want to have some part of the realness that must have brought us into being. And that's really what the article discusses, how we can also make an idol of nature and misunderstand it and confound the two different concepts that we're talking about here, that we don't want to think natural is a tree growing outside. Well, only to the same extent that we are natural, because that tree was made by God just as much as we are. And God made us. We are artificial. And that tells us a lot about what it means to be real and what God has in mind for us.
We'll talk about that more on the other side of the break. Rebecca Curtis is our guest, pastor's wife, a mother of seven children with a master's degree from Concordia Seminary, co-author of the book Ladylike Living Biblically, and a recent column we're discussing from Modern Reformation titled Nature versus Nature. When we come back, how does the longing for the natural, how can it become an idol? Stay tuned. Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.
Memoria Press invites all Issues Etc. listeners to explore our Simply Classical curriculum, a set of full-year academic curriculum packages for children with learning challenges. Our classical writing program and our Christian studies are now based on your favorite CPH Bible storybooks. To learn more, visit classicalspecialneeds.com and use promo code LPR to save on your initial purchase. That's classicalspecialneeds.com.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. Paul's Lutheran, Coleman, Alabama. Faith Lutheran, Waterloo, Iowa. Emmanuel Lutheran, Everett, Washington. Lake George Lutheran Chapel, Fremont, Indiana. Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Snohomish, Washington. Faith Lutheran, Buford, South Carolina, Trinity Lutheran, Great Falls, Montana, Mount Calvary Lutheran, Westview, Pennsylvania, St. Paul Lutheran, International Falls, Minnesota, Redeemer Lutheran, Marshalltown, Iowa, Trinity and Grace Lutheran, Bear Creek, Wisconsin, St. Paul Lutheran, Sevierville, Tennessee, Good Shepherd Lutheran, Sherman, Illinois, and Zion Lutheran, Dexter, Iowa. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk about man's longing for reality. Rebecca Curtis is our guest. She's also co-author of the book Ladylike Living Biblically, and it's recently been released as an audiobook. You can find out more about the audiobook of Ladylike Living Biblically at cph.org. You mentioned before that this longing for reality, which in itself is not necessarily a bad thing, can and often is twisted into an idol. How is that, Rebecca?
We're always looking for answers. And nature offers a very simplistic one. You know, I want to be a healthy person, so I'm only going to eat natural food. I'm going to eat things that I grew in my yard. I'm going to eat grass-fed organic beef, and I'm not going to eat things out of boxes and cans because those are obviously unnatural because they're in boxes and cans, which you don't get in your backyard and out in the pasture. And it offers this kind of an ethos, a unifying principle for a person's life, a thing to strive for, a way to atone for past sins, something to always improve at, and that fills that need to have a purpose. And if you've ever read anything about this, people developing something that has gotten called orthorexia, where they can only eat things that they have determined are healthy and pure enough for them to eat. And that's a the whole mindset is a great way of distracting us from our real problems. It kind of takes the place of a real ethical system and a real thing to believe in. And the silliest thing about it is even secular philosophy, in the article I cited a famous quote by Carl Sagan who says, if you want to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first create a universe. If you want to eat natural food, we can only regress so far before we run out of nature. You know, I can stop eating applesauce from a jar and start eating an apple that I bought at the store, and then I can plant an apple tree in my yard and start only eating apples from that tree, but I can't make an apple. I can't explain how that's done. I can't manufacture it from chemicals or from elements that I have. There is no way that we ourselves can make anything that occurs in nature as God has made it. And that way, that chase for natural things really leads us astray, gives us a false god, and away from what all those things are supposed to point us to. We're supposed to look at nature and say, hey, I didn't make this. And obviously somebody did. So there must be someone out there.
You also said that we ourselves are artificial, and you didn't. I take it you don't mean that in a derogatory way.
No,
how do you
not
understand
at all.
That?
I ran into this whole idea. I was reading Athanasius's treatise on the Incarnation, and throughout that treatise, he uses the term demiurge, the Greek term demiurge for God, which is very interesting. You know, anyone who's taken a kind of basic level early Christian or early church class or early Christian theology class will knows that term, the demiurge, is the Gnostic term for God. And Athanasius just throws it around like it's no big deal. And it really struck me as strange. Why would he use this term? You know, isn't he sending the wrong message or, allowing the use of this this name for God that we know is not true, the way he uses it very nonchalantly, he obviously doesn't have a problem with it. If you translate demiurge into English, it comes out artificer, the one who artifices things, the maker. And it just really struck me that, you know, we often think of God as the maker, but we normally think of artifice as being kind of deceptive or not, you know, not really above the board, like you're trying to get away with having made something, but you've done it in a shoddy or illegitimate way. Athanasius obviously did not perceive the term that way, or he wouldn't have used it so much. There is nothing wrong with our being artificial. It is our highest honor, in fact, because we were made by that God who is the maker.
So we have, on the one hand, this impulse toward the real, trying to get to the ground of what reality is. You said that really is an opportunity seen in the Christian context, in the biblical context, to contemplate again what it is our Creator, the one who crafted us and made us, has in store for us. But we're not going to get it on this side of the resurrection. Talk about that.
Right. Another thing I use as an illustration in this article are stories that everybody is familiar with from their own childhood or from reading it to whatever children are in their lives. The story of the Velveteen Rabbit, where the stuffed rabbit wants so much to be real, and another toy in the nursery, the horse, tells him that he was made real by the boy's uncle, and then at the end of the story, the rabbit becomes real. Another example of this is the story of Pinocchio, where he wants to be a real boy, and he goes through all of this long life of criminal behavior and recidivism and bringing shame to Geppetto, the father who made him in his wood shop, who made him a wood puppet. And at the end of the story, Pinocchio does get to be a real boy. And those stories are not new. This is the story our Lord tells us, that he has made us and that he has even better things in store for us, and that these are not abstractions, that in the incarnation of Jesus, all those things become so clear that he takes on our own flesh and that he gives us his own flesh to eat, that he joins his real, essential, eternal substance to the substance that we have as creatures in this life. And if that's what you've been eating your whole life, it's going to make a difference in eternity.
So the real, that which we all long for naturally, comes only in the resurrection of Christ and its fulfillment in our resurrection. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's where we have that connection between the eternal substance of God, which is a mystery at the same time, and in another mystery in the incarnation, we see the reality of who God is, such that he can and will become like one of us, and that is the ultimate gift that he will give us, is a share in that eternity, in that reality, in that being essential to what is. That is what he wants for every one of his creatures.
Is the converse also true, Rebecca, with about a minute here, and that is any seeking after a reality, that the real, apart from Christ, his incarnation, his death, and his resurrection, and the promise of ours to come, is going to end in idolatry?
Absolutely. In the Old Testament, the people are constantly warned about worshiping idols, and it's always on the basis of they were made. Somebody just made that. He carved it out of wood. He carved it out of stone. It's nothing. And anytime we turn to any other created thing, that's the same thing. It has no essence in itself. Its only essence is having been created, and one created thing can't save another. To have our own handle in that essential aspect of who God is, of something that will last forever, we cannot look to creation for that because creation doesn't have it to offer.
Rebecca Curtis is a pastor's wife and mother of seven children with a master's degree from Concordia Seminary, co-author of the book Ladylike Living Biblically and a recent column for Modern Reformation magazine titled Nature Versus Nature. Rebecca, thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Marjorie Dannenfelser about Hillary Clinton and federal funding of abortion. We'll also get our weekly update on the November elections from journalists Mark and Molly Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and the Federalist. That's tomorrow on Issues Etc. The only real that there is has been provided by Christ himself. True humanity, real humanity restored and given back to us in the resurrection. We long for the real, and there he is in the flesh. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
The grace of God, the church's music, the Lord's Supper every service every Sunday, preaching Christ crucified and risen, our hope for years to come. There is hope in St. Louis, Hope Lutheran Church, that is. 5218 Neosho Street, St. Louis, Missouri. Find us on the web at hopelutheranstl.org.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.